Joe presents Swanee's Cricket Show, together with Rubicon.
Welcome to episode 4 of Swanee's Cricket Show here on Joe, together with Rubicon. I'm Nick Bright. This handsome devil is Graham Swan. Come on, Swanee, let's get in it. As we continue talking about the World Cup and the Ashes on the show, of course.
Oh, hello, mate.
Oh, it's good to be back. Although, I'm not going to lie, it's been a bit of a rain-soaked week.
I've quite enjoyed it, to be honest. Well, because a lot of people moan it. A lot of people say, oh, my God, this is a farce. Cricket World Cup's been ruined by all the rain. There's 60-odd games in the group stages. We've lost three. We are English, so you get a lot of people saying, what a joke. What a bloody joke. It's too wet. But, you know, we've lost a couple of games. They've not been that important. And we've still seen some good cricket. So the bad weather's gone now. The forecasters.
Yes.
Yeah, they tell me it's going to be great. We've got a month of good weather. It's going to be awesome. So I'm not a doom and gloomer.
Right, let's get back to the cricket, though, because there's been a couple of big games over the last few days. England's destruction of the West Indies.
Come on.
You were at Old Trafford. I heard you on TMS talking about the India-Pakistan game. Now, the first question that I wanted to ask you is, what was the atmosphere like in the ground?
Yeah, well, put it this way. India-Pakistan is, in real terms, one of the biggest sporting things in the world, because it doesn't happen that often anymore, and the political tensions aside, this is a massive game, and the whole world stopped. And the whole world, it seemed, descended on Manchester. So when you commentate there, you park in the football ground, and everywhere you look, teeming with Pakistan flags, with Indian shirts. Who made those Indian shirts? They must be minted. I reckon there's been about 6 billion. How many people in the world? 7 billion? I reckon 6 billion people have got Indian one-day shirts with Kohli on the back. Everywhere. And just the noise and the vuvuzelas playing and people driving around in cars. It was carnival-type atmosphere, though, but it was massive.
I've got a number here, more than 700,000 applications for tickets. I mean, that's unbelievable, isn't it? I can't imagine. I mean, mainly because I'm not a player and I've never been that talented to do anything like that, but I can't imagine that many people worshipping you, you know, not only wanting to get to the game, but in your own home countries as well.
But the weird thing is, as well, like, when the game started, you could sense that. You could definitely, in the air, it was like, wow, this is a big deal, this game. India just rose to it. Yeah. They loved it. They puffed their chest out. You could see Virat Kohli was loving every minute of it. Pakistan didn't. They sort of tried to tiptoe themselves into the game. Their spinners, who were so good, were nervous, bombing full tosses. And that's why they got hammered in the end.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been nice if it was like a real close game, you know, just for the tension factor and all the rest of it. But you've played in India.
Yeah.
Just give us, you know, non-cricketers here, a taste of what it's like playing in a country where this sport is massive.
Yeah, it's bigger than football in England by such a degree, it's ridiculous. So when these players go to hotels, the hotel in like a small town, you play one day series, you go round the country, you fly into a place. We went to a place called Indore, and they were finishing the hotel literally as you got there. They were still painting the walls, and like everyone had their own individual room and everything. There was a crowd of 5,000 people outside all night. So if you open your curtains, they go, "Hey!" And then you'd be shouting at it, it'd stop. And I still remember, I think it was Samit Patel all night, it was just going, "Hey!"
Just for a laugh.
Yeah, it is bonkers over there. The Indian cricketers are that famous. When I played in New York a few years ago, it was the same thing. Times Square, there were like 5,000 Indian fans around this hotel as soon as they got wind that he was there, all expats. And then NYPD were called in the next day. So they're doing like a human chain. They don't have a clue what's going on these coppers. And one of them stopped me and he went, "Hey, buddy, who is this guy?" I went, "That's Sachin Tendulkar." "Yeah?" I said, "He's like the biggest thing in cricket. He's like the Michael Jordan of cricket, if you will." He goes, "I thought he'd be fucking taller." So that's it.
That was my next question, because the celebrity, you know, factor for people like Tendulkar and now Virat Kohli, MS Dhoni, you know, in India. Have you witnessed that? Have you seen kind of like other than the example you just given, in India, have you seen kind of the hubbub around someone like Kohli or Dhoni?
Yeah, massive. I mean, Sachin Tendulkar once flew commercially with us. So the teams hire, and teams don't do it, but the Indian Cricket Board, when you tour, they charter a jet. And so the two teams and all the press fly on the same jet between cities. And the Indian players are all up front and playing. The England players are back by the bogs.
Right.
That's actually how it works. It's quite a nice touch, actually. So when they come, we give them a real shitty coach with everything, with a toilet that didn't work and everything. The driver has to stop with a plunger every 20 miles. But Sachin never went through the airports. And you think, oh, he's bigger than the game, sort of giving it large. He's not, because the one time he had to do it, the airport shut down because even the people working at the desk, they can't be bothered. They were just like desperately trying to touch him and
really
trying to get close to him. Yeah. So normally he's just cruising on a little G4. Yeah, oh, there he goes. It's actually come a lift.
Right. We should get our guest on, I think.
I think we should. Yeah, I'm excited about this as well. I love this man.
Again, I'm looking forward to hearing some stories from you both. So each week we have a guest with us on the show. And speaking of India, actually, this man made 88 against India in his test debut
course
for England.
He did.
It's the former Middlesex and England star, Oh, Shah. Come on.
Yeah.
Here he
comes.
Did you notice straight away the size of Oasis's hands? These are the biggest hands in the game, mate.
Hang on, didn't you say that about Monty?
No,
last
Monty's
week?
Got the longest
He's
hands.
He's got the longest fingers.
Monty's got freaky
he?
Fingers, but this man's hand, born for batting, just like.
Well, I reckon we should just jump straight in. You know, you played for England in all three forms. What's your favourite?
It's got to be Test cricket, hands down. As
why,
much
why
as I going? Love the fact that, you know, 2020's come along in the last, what, 15 years or so. And it's really exciting and I love it. But the ultimate dream of any kid is playing Test cricket. I mean, this man will tell you, I mean, he's been successful in all forms of the game for England. And it's just that feeling you get when you walk out, you know, you put your Test cap on and you walk out, especially at, say, at Lord's.
Yeah.
There's no other feeling that comes close to it. It's weird. But it actually, I mean, it's a slow game. Jesus, it goes on for 5 days, especially when you're chasing leather. But it's just, it's something about it. The buzz around a test match, you can't compare it to anything.
It's lovely to hear that, isn't it?
Do you know what? It's interesting to hear it just because, you know, one of the questions that I want to ask you both, actually, you can both jump in on this, is what do you make of this argument of, you know, the fact that young kids playing cricket now are looking at test cricket as boring and 2020s.
Well, I get it. If you've never been introduced to it as a kid, if you've never played it, I get why you'd think that. Mm. I was just thinking, like, 15 years' time, if we sat down with equivalent players in 15 years' time and asked them whether they'd go, oh, yeah, test cricket, like Grandad used to play. and they might do, but honestly, they miss out something. I know very few players who are still playing the game because I don't know many of these kids who've grown up personally. Who don't think Test cricket's the ultimate and want to play Test cricket. There'd be one or two who sold their souls to the devil and, like, fly off playing World 2020. But they get caught up in a rock and roll world of sex, booze and drugs and stuff. So, yeah, there's a lesson we learn there, children. 40 pieces of silver sells your soul.
Right, let's get some stories then, because you two have played together, you've kind of grown up together and stuff. Oh, Ace, we'll start with you. What's your memories of Swanee in the dressing room and in the game?
Swanee. I'll tell you what, it was more the fact that I used to use Swanee, especially when we used to tour. You know, it doesn't matter where you're touring. It could be the best place, say, Australia, South Africa, or somewhere pretty dull like, I don't know, Zimbabwe or maybe India. You know, you're sort of locked in your rooms. But it was always a time in your touring days that, you know, you might feel a bit down or something, and it was always the guy to go to. To, like, just to lift the spirits up and just crack jokes, or go on, Swanee, do me an impression of Bumble or something like that. I don't know. And that would, you know, just lift you up.
You see, you're saying this, but I used to do the same with Oasis, because this man does the best Vivian Richards, not verbally, but, like, physically batting. When he used to play for Middlesex, he does the with the bat.
We used to do impressions all the time.
He used to do the bat, like, pushing the top of the handle down. And he'd be fielding for Middlesex, and I'd be on the balcony going,
This is during a county game, a proper game. Yeah. And we're just acting like clowns. So
just pissing around.
Yeah. So that's why I used to use Swanee, like, just to lift me up and, you know, put a smile on my face and things like that.
Well, a lot of that is, like, because you played under-19s together, so you get, like, a bond with players who are out of the counties, don't you? So going through, I always remember Stephen Peters, who played with us as well, Pedro, great lad, really top boy. And I played against Worcester one year when he was playing there, and he caught me at slip on the half volley. It was blatant. And I lost my shit walking off with the umpire. I was like, you're giving me out. I'm like, that's blatantly not out. And I walked off, I kicked the gate, and I swore at a member of Worcester. I think I got a letter of complaint and everything put in. And it made it worse. And it was Pedro, it was my mate, who claimed it. And I went and sat outside the pavilion like this about 20 minutes later. He's on the far side of the ground. And he can see me looking at him. And he's fielding there, and he keeps going, oh. And I'm picking the grass out. He's going, laughing his head off. And it was brilliant, but I wanted to kill it. I was like, Pedro, I'll kill you! And he walked out and goes, oh, seriously, though, it only went in one hand, so one hand, one bounce counts. I was like, you little...
Right, take me back to your early days growing up in Pakistan. You know, how was street cricket, which is massive there, responsible for your progression?
Yeah, it's huge. Look, born and raised in Pakistan, I was up to the age of 8. I didn't come to England. And typically, my day would sort of look like, you know, you go to school, you come back by, say, 1 o'clock. It's pretty hot by then. So you sort of have a little snooze or something. Then you do your homework. And by between four till six, you're out just playing street cricket. We used to live in flats. So literally the road down, you know, underneath the flats, people would block off the roads. The guys, the older guys, would organise something so that they could block off the road. And we just literally play street cricket. And if a car wanted to go past, the game would stop, almost like these big bollards would be moved. Then the car would go, and then we would block it off again. And that's how I was brought up playing street cricket. Rules are, if you hit it on the leg side in that house, it's 2 runs. If you hit it there, you're out. You know, things like
there
that.
There must have been 4 through the offside wrist, because he was such a good driver of the ball.
So, and things like that. And it's actually weird, Swanee says that. So I used to play cricket, then I'll come upstairs, I'll have my dinner, and then I'll play corridor cricket from about, say, 9 o'clock till 10 o'clock. And in that, it was a tiny little corridor, and my mate would bowl tennis ball spin, and I would actually practice. The rules of the game were, if you hit the ball on the wall, you're out. So without realising, you're actually practising not getting out bat pad.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that sort of helped me a lot later on in my career. Because people said, oh, you can play spin quite well. And I thought, but I never had extra training to play spin.
Seriously, though.
And all I did
when dressing room cricket came round, Oasis was untouchable.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I did it as a kid.
You could spin it square both ways. And you'd be going, how's he doing this? How's he doing it?
That's what I used to do. So it's weird, you know, just growing up that way. And then when I moved to England, I joined a cricket club. And that's when I got introduced to proper hardball cricket. You know, as obviously went through the ranks, so obviously our paths crossed when we were, 12, 13?
First time I played away as the under-13 club finals championship, Sherborne School.
That's it, yeah.
I was playing for lovely Horton House. And what club?
Wickham House, I was
Wickham
playing.
House, yeah.
Yeah.
And he was fast. I remember him bowling me. Fast in-swingers. He could bat, obviously.
Yeah.
The year before, I played David Sales at the same thing. And David Sales could hit the ball further than a man. At 13,
yeah.
But he was a size for a man, to be fair. And the next year, I thought he was Wacker Yunus. Mate, this kid, and he still had a Pakistani accent as well, could speak English. And it was like, this Wacker Yunus, I've just been bowled by Wacker Yunus. Rapid.
Yeah, it was crazy.
There's so many lovely things about that story that you just told, though. You know, the fact that playing cricket in the corridor, the road getting closed, and because cricket is so big in Pakistan, I can just imagine nobody's losing their temper that the road's been closed. You know, if it was here and you closed the road, someone would
it's cricket. Actually, it's cricket, lads.
But out there, it's probably just like, playing cricket.
Oh, no, it's accepted. You know, the car will stop and it will be moved and then the car will go along. And we'll possibly even sometimes stop for like 2 or 3 minutes, a few cars go, and then cricket's going on.
Because then those drivers probably grew up playing street cricket.
Exactly.
Anyway.
And they know exactly what, you know.
And they look after the kids as well. Look after the kids. The kids... I believe the kids are our future. Well, let them lead the way. You know?
Father's Day is finished, mate.
Before we talk about your debut, I just wanted to ask you myself, the main differences you noticed when you came to England between kind of cricket in Pakistan that you were used to playing and then kind of how it was received and how it's played in England. Can you remember that part of your life?
Well, I'll tell you what, the biggest culture shock for me was when I moved over when I was 8. We lived in a house, and right outside the house, obviously a road, and then there was this little field. Sort of
little green.
A little green, almost. And I thought, perfect, cricket.
Yeah.
Right? No ball games allowed. Yeah. Like, what the hell is that all about?
I know.
So, even.
Are you listening, Haringey Council?
Yeah, it's crazy. So we ignored it, and I would try and get on there, and there would be these people who would be living it coming out going, have you not read the sign? And we're like,
I know.
Are you for serious? Where am I going to go and play cricket or football or whatever? That was the biggest culture shock.
Wow.
Coming to England. In terms of cricket, I guess, look, I really learned all my cricket with a hard ball in England. So I didn't really know much different to what I was taught. It was more about having certain heroes growing up. Obviously, Pakistani heroes like Javed Miandad or Imran Khan and people like that. And then as I got older, obviously, I played at Middlesex, so you had Gatting, Ram Prakash, people like that were a bit of a hero. And then getting into sort of first-class cricket and obviously international cricket, started looking at more like Viv Richards or Sachin Tendulkar. Those kind of guys were my heroes. So the heroes sort of changed as the more and more time I sort of spent there. But I think that was the biggest difference was the fact that the culturally, you know, you can't.
I can't believe that. That's annoying me. Has that made anyone else angry? You should run for government.
You know?
Your only thing. Ball games allowed.
Ball games allowed everywhere.
Ball games allowed.
Yeah,
in fact, that makes more sense than most of the politicians these days.
It was just really bizarre.
Bollocks to Brexit, ball games allowed. Vote Graham.
Right, your debut. 17 years old. You're in the dressing room with the likes of Gatting, Ramprakash, Fraser, Tuffers. I mean, these are big names. What were you thinking when you were in that dressing room? Were you just like, oh, I can't believe I'm sat here?
It was...
You wouldn't have been fazed by that, though.
No, I wasn't really, because I tell you why. Because they weren't my growing up heroes. They were only became my heroes when I sort of joined Middlesex.
Did you know about them, though?
I knew about Gatting, of course, because he played international cricket. I knew a little bit about Ramps because I was compared to Ramps as an 11, 12-year-old. But apart from that, obviously I knew Tufnell and Fraser, but they weren't my heroes. Yeah. I didn't really worry about them. Do you know what I mean? So the only guy who I knew about was Gat, but he wasn't a hero. And Rams became a bit of a hero once I started playing more and more for Middlesex. Apart from that, so they weren't my heroes. So I wasn't that fussed. I was actually loving the fact that I was quite young, but I was given an opportunity in the first team. And because I was 17, I was still playing under 19s, under 18s cricket, England.
And bossing it. Bossing every game you played, by the way.
And we'd all sort of meet up to play these games. And some of the guys weren't fortunate enough to play first team cricket, but I was one of the few who was. So that sort of gave you a bit of an edge when you, you know, joined up with the under-19s and stuff. And you go, you know, you have got some first-class experience.
So when England under-15s played, my brother's playing in that team, they played the under-14s in a two-day game. And I ace played in that game, got 200. So he's playing against the England team a year above as a kid. He got a double 100. Arundel scored.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Because I was the only person who knew who Ace was. Like, I know him. He's a wacko unit. He got me out last year at Sherwood Scott.
I'll tell you what.
My brother is coming out and going, oh my God, this bloke's unbelievable.
I'll tell you a story about that. That game was a bit of a trial. No, sorry. The game before that was a bit of a trial where I didn't get picked, but instead of me, Andrew Flintoff got picked.
Oh, really?
But Freddie broke his thumb in the following game and I replaced Freddie. And then I got the opportunity to play this double 100 game.
It's so funny how these things work. Yeah.
And then when I was 17, I got picked to go to West Indies, but my passport wasn't ready because I was still qualifying for England.
Because in Pakistan, age, he was still two.
Right.
He had his passport.
So guess who replaced me on that West Indies trip?
Graham Swan.
Andrew Flintoff.
Not Freddie. He didn't see the punch, was he? But,
it was bizarre, isn't it? It's bizarre. I replaced him and then he replaced me. Yeah.
It's funny how the world works. Right, as a boy from Pakistan, your best knock for England surely must have been 100 against India.
Yes and no.
Go on.
Because, albeit we ended up losing the One Day International, I tell you what, my 88 in the Test match actually carries a bit more value to me than my 100 in the One Day game.
Why?
Because Test cricket. Match. Because Test cricket and England went on to win the Test match and we drew the series in India, which was unheard of.
Yeah.
You know, we were 1-0 down going into that Test match. And I only played because Alistair Cook had a bit of a deli belly the night before. So what happened, we got onto the coach. So the announcer team the night before, I'm not in it. I turn up to the ground. I'm sitting here still. Nah, I don't think I'm playing. I'm sitting in my shorts. So I'm not going to do a warm-up because no one's telling me anything. And then I look here. Cookie's sitting here crying. I'm like, you're all right, mate. It's only a Test match.
He's not going that quick.
No, you only got 102 Test matches. Yeah. You'll be all right, mate. He goes, no, I'm not playing. And, you know, I've had a deli belly, da-da-da-da. So I'm like, oh, shit, I better grab my bag. I went out, had some throwdowns. And then I prepared for the game that way. And I ended up getting 88 and we went on to win the Test match. And that's the game where you heard about Freddie singing a song at lunchtime. The Ring of Fire, So that was a Test match. That carries more value to me than 100 against India at the Oval.
What a story! Oh, what a story!
Oase, also, I've got to throw this in, did the funniest acceptance speech I've ever heard in my life when we won the Under-19 World Cup in South Africa. Oase was captain. We won the final. We had a six-week tour of South Africa beforehand. And let's just say this team we had a lot of individuals in it, a lot of spirit.
Yeah.
We were unmanageable, basically. Yeah. Our manager said to us at one point, we give up with you lot, do what you want. Train yourselves, decide what you want, because you don't listen to a bloody word we say.
And so rather
than us all going, oh shit, sorry coach, you all went, all right. So we ran ourselves and we won this World Cup on the back of it. I mean, let's face it, we weren't the best team, but we got a bit of luck along the way. Got in the final and we absolutely annihilated New Zealand. And afterwards, Oase picked up the trophy and in his words, we were so bubbly, so excited. Just went, I just want to thank New Zealand, you know, for coming along, but we dealt with them. And that was it. It just went, cheers, mate. And we stood there ready for a boring, politically correct, you know, we couldn't have done it. We got to thank New Zealand. They were great and real competitive. But we dealt with them.
And it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate now they use that speech to do media training for the under-19s
now. No way.
How not to accept the World Cup if you end up winning it.
I just remember tears streaming on the bus. We go, we dealt with it.
It was a bizarre tour. We didn't care. Like, to give you an example, like when the coach and the manager went, look, you know what, you guys are unmanageable. Our warm-ups, right, would be not, you know, a jog and a stretch. We literally go for a little jog about 20, 30 yards. Everyone would sit down in a circle and we just have a sit-down stretch for 25 minutes. That's all we used to do.
There'll be little drills that you know, this don't work for me. We're doing this because someone's watching, blah, blah, blah. And we wipe them out. So we're getting probably stretched. We sat down doing a full stretch, but just telling stories and building bonds and getting a better team spirit by doing it.
Yeah, it worked.
It absolutely worked. And yet, we've not been put in charge of the England team yet.
I mean, that's ridiculous. There's still time, fellas.
They're not winning the World Cup yet. If they don't win the World Cup, we need the job.
Yeah.
Hang fire, because we got so much. I knew this was going to be a good show. Right, you are watching and listening to Swanee's Cricket Show here on Joe, together with Rubicon. We'll be here each week during the World Cup and the Ashes, of course. Now, don't forget, you can watch and download some of our other shows, including TKO with Carl Frampton and House of Rugby. That's with James Haskell. Really good show if you've not checked that out. This week, the Rugby Boys have a best of edition with Olympic champion Ben Ryan.
Go on, Ben.
And then a mate said to me on Twitter, do you fancy, you know, Fiji jobs available?
It came through Twitter?
Yeah, it came through Twitter originally, yeah. And they said, like, let's have a Skype interview at 2 in the morning. And then 2, 2.33, 3.30, and no one had called. And, you know, if you've been to Fiji, I know you haven't been, but it's Fiji time, right? No hurry, no worry, you know. And so eventually 4 o'clock, it fires up, and they just project my face onto 35 Gordon Street at the CEO's back wall. Everyone's kind of peering in, asking if I knew Johnny Wilkinson, if I'd met the Queen. Kind of serious questions, really.
Did they give you the job then and there? Or they
no, back, so I got on the Fiji Times website to have a look and see a bit more about Fiji, and the first bit was the CEO that just interviewed me had been sacked immediately after my interview. Right. So that was that. And then 2 weeks later, I'm in Jamie Oliver's in Richmond, and we're out having dinner. +679, which is Fiji, I pick it up and say hi, and said, hi, this is Berlin Kafoa. I'm the acting chief executive of the Fiji Rugby Union. We've got a press conference in 20 minutes. So I said, OK, that's great. What's it about? I said, to appoint you as a new Sevens coach.
That's Ben Ryan on House of Rugby this week. Oh, this Benny. Is right Swan's on, Cricket Show. I'm Nick Bright, along with Graham Swan and former England batsman O.S. Shah.
O.S.
These two have got stories for days. Right, let's dig into some World Cup issues. I can't take him seriously. Let's dig into some World Cup issues. How good were India?
First of all, they're led by my favourite human being on the planet at the minute, Virat Kohli. He is transcending what a normal cricketer is like. He's using his position in India as a superstar amongst people and a role model for good. And I'll tell you why. He walked off the field yesterday.
Well, I was
not only did he do
that.
The Steve Smith thing when he went to the crowd and said, stop booing, clap him, which is great because, you know, I hate the booing of people. Yeah, it's boorish, yeah, yeah. It's pathetic, it's Brexit, it's horrible. But this was even more, because I've always hated non-walkers. I've had an argument with every batsman in the game. No, no, you should wait for the umpire. It's the umpire's job. It's cheating, I think. Well, if you nick it and you stand there, you know you've nicked it, you know you're out, and if you use the excuse, I'm letting the umpire decide whether I have or not, you're still cheating. You're cheating yourself more than anything else. Virat walked off, and yet it turned out he didn't even hit it.
Yeah, exactly.
So he's that honest. He's giving himself out when he's even not. he's a modern-day Jesus.
You were on commentary, and I think the clip that I watched that you were talking about it, and there is a sound.
Well, I'll always maintain that you know if you've hit it. I've never nicked a ball and didn't know I'd hit it.
Apparently it's the handle of his bat clicking.
Yeah, but you know, sometimes it's corking out, and it can sometimes click and stuff like that. But if he thinks he's out and walks out, I mean, Oasis is about it. Oasis didn't walk.
Yeah, I was going to. Well, that was going to be my next thing.
Would you, because sometimes, especially when I play Graham, he'd appeal it. How was that when he knows clearly it's not out? When the ball's outside the line, but hey, that's not cheating.
No, right? I never did that.
Because I'm waiting for the umpire to make a decision, apparently that's cheating.
I'd always appeal if I thought it was out. I was clever in my appealing, because I'd stop. If I started appealing, I'd stop and go, that's not out, is it? I'm sorry about that. So I'd never go a massive appeal when it wasn't out because you're messing yourself up.
Yeah,
and so there is kidology involved. Yeah, he's dead right. But I didn't do it to cheat. I did it because bowlers are an honest lot. Let's just get back to it. Walking. I think, honestly, if the whole world walked, like you've got a son now growing up, and like my boy's 8 as well, if I went to watch him play school cricket and he walked off, I'd be proud of him. If I went to watch him and he started chirping and having a go at the opposition, I'd be disgusted with him. And if you man-cadding anyone, I'd disown him. He'd go to the orphanage.
Say if you don't walk, right? Say if an England player didn't walk, if something similar happened.
Yeah.
Do you get bollocked in the changing room for something like that?
No, you wouldn't. Yeah, it'd be left up to you. I remember Andrew Flintoff once, because I said, I was always quite vociferous about walking. When people were having a go at Stuart Broad, they said, "Oh, all of a sudden you don't think that walking's a bad thing." So yes, I do. Broad, he knows he should have walked off, but he doesn't. He's come out with saying, "I don't walk. The Australians don't walk." So, I remember Andrew Flintoff being asked in a press conference, said, "Oh, if you don't walk, you'd have to deal with me in the changing room." I'd welcomed it. He could have battered the shit out of me. He would have done. He's massive, but morally, "Oh, you're not really a cheat." No, I'm not. If everyone just walked off the field, if there was no need for it, because every game I ever played that got nasty and horrible, and if you ever played league cricket or watched league cricket, always it would be something like that, someone nicking the ball, not walking. Even though it's people who are then having a go at him will do the same thing, it turns nasty and personal and horrible, and I don't think it's called for. So if everyone just walked off, then the world would be a fair place and Brexit wouldn't be happening.
So would you have walked?
Anyway, yeah. No, I probably wouldn't have, but I wasn't really a walker. I wasn't a walker. But saying that, sometimes I have walked in my career, but generally I was not a walker.
Okay. I always used to do one thing that was amazing, by the way. So he used to be deemed quite arrogant as a batsman because he knew he was good, but he was idiosyncratic. I think that's fair to say. He did things that no one else had done. Never forget, under-19 cricket playing in South Africa. Do you remember Bodie?
Gulam Bodie.
These left-arm leg spinners. Anyway, he's bowling at O-A's, and I didn't even get it on camera. So he just batting them like this. And if it is a shit ball or whatever, right, why did the officer don't rather than, like, go, leave it or whatever? O-A's would just carry on doing that and go... and wait, watch the ball get thrown round the bat, all the way to the bowler. And then he run up and bowl it again, and it's shit again, and just go... And honestly, you see the humiliation, like, the bowler just go... Oh, he's really taking the piss out of me. He used to make me laugh. But I'd be down the other end going, "Come on, mate, just hit one of them." He'd go, "You've got to make me play, mate. He's got to make me play."
There's a lot of mind games and stuff that goes on in cricket, though. One of the things that I love about it, you know, even you know, when you've got people at slips and the wicket keepers shouting stuff to the bowler to get in the batsman's head.
Yeah, but see, that's funny. They do that, and they're talking about it and they're taking the piss over. That is proper cricket. That's funny. David Nash, who you played for Middlesex. Nash is one of the funniest blokes I've ever played with.
You know, cricket wouldn't be cricket if you didn't have those sort of sledges or those little dig at your mate. You know very well you're a good mate, but obviously when you're playing against each other, you want him out.
Yeah.
I'm sure Swanee wanted him out.
That's funny when it's done properly, but when it's just abuse, you're an asshole. That doesn't work. It's just like abuse.
We're going to do a full show on sledging in the next few weeks, so I'm looking forward to hearing some stories. Right, bet 100, Rohit Sharma or Joe Root?
Rohit Sharma.
Why?
Situation of the game. It was a bigger game. England West Indies, we'd rolled them for 200 on a belt and wicket. It was freezing cold. The Windies just weren't the races. That game, India Pakistan, I said it, there was a palpable sense of big game atmosphere at that. And that was a big occasion yesterday.
No, massive. But
the world class in him came out, rose to the occasion. Him and Virat Kohli yesterday were unbelievable.
Because you've got to remember, cricket, it's not just when the game goes at that level, it's not about how well his cover drive is or how well he... It's about 95% mental.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And if you talk to some of the greats of the game, like especially Indians or Pakistani greats of the game, they all talk about that bloody Pakistan game or that Indian game. I was a bit nervous, mate. But you're like, but it wasn't even the final, mate. No, mate.
It was. This is a day that was going to define their lives. In your career, you'll have 4 or 5 days that define your entire career. Like I always said about his Test debut, it defines his career. That 200 you got as a 15-year-old. Sometimes you know that day is about to happen. Yesterday, those players knew that this is potentially a career-defining day. Yeah. And Rohit Sharma's just sealed that as an absolute genius day to remember for him and his family and his legacy that will lead on. It was amazing.
Yeah, Rohit's having a good World Cup so far.
I've got him in the sweepstakes as well with the BBC. Win £2.50.
The reason I was just trying to butt in is because on our first episode, you said you quite fancied as an outside bet the West Indies. Are you still sticking with that?
No, I'm not.
Right.
I'm not, only because they've just lost too many games now. They should have beaten that Australian team. Mm. I fancied not the bit part players, that's a bad thing to say. They're lesser-known players like Pooran. I thought he'd have a better World Cup. He's batting nicely, he's just not putting the runs on the board. And their bowlers, aside from the Pakistan game, they haven't got a plan B.
OK, well, let's focus some attention on England. Big news, we're going to be missing Jason Roy for 2 games.
Yeah.
Is that a big, big miss for you, or do you think we can cope without him?
I think we can cope without him. Ideally, he'd play, because he's brilliant. And that 100 and whatever he got at Cardiff showed how good he is. Mm. But if it gives James Vince a chance to get in the team... And give himself the belief in himself, because he is mustard, that kid.
Jeez, bloody hell.
He's mustard. And everyone who's played against him just goes, wow, this kid's like the best player.
And you know what? That's the reason I think England can go on to win the World Cup, because of the depth we have. You just heard Swanee say, Roy's going to get replaced by this guy who he's just said he's amazing. We haven't been in a situation, especially in a World Cup, to be able to do that ever before. And that's why the depth in our squad is ridiculous. And that's why I reckon we have got the best chance ever to win the World Cup.
Right, I think it's about time we got Rocket in.
For go on then, Rocket.
Yeah, so Rocket, get on in here. Get on in here. Come on, Rocket.
Hey, man.
So, I'm good.
Fastest quiz master in the game.
Bloody hell, fast.
So Rocket has been doing a minute with last week. It was with Monty Panesar, of course. He spoke about his love for Holmes Under the Hammer. What will Owen Shaw talk about? Right, a minute with Rocket. Right. It's over to you, mate.
Owen's time starts now. Cricket World Cup.
England.
The Oval.
Batting Paradise.
Sledging.
Love it.
Best bowler.
Graham Swan.
Best batter.
Graham Swan.
Hey!
Best ever cricketer.
Graham Swan.
Film.
Shawshank Redemption.
TV programme.
Homeland.
Music.
R&B.
Song.
Any song.
Pass. You can pass.
Pass. To
animal.
Lion.
Car.
Aston Martin.
Food.
Steak and chips.
Crisps.
McCoy's.
Cartoon.
Tom and Jerry.
Holiday destination.
Barbados.
Best feature.
Oh, Smile.
Worst feature.
None. Yeah.
Hobby.
10 seconds.
A hobby, fitness.
Scared of?
Five. Four, three, two.
Go on.
Losing everything.
Losing. That's it. That's
next
it.
Time.
Time over.
Time
for the main time man.
Cheers, man. Jeez, that's
legend.
Hard.
Oh.
Under the pump.
I know.
It is.
Right, before we get out to bat fast, I can't believe you couldn't think of one R&B tune.
You know what I thought you were going to say? Girl, if it's all right, let's go
get it
somewhere
on tonight.
And get it on tonight.
You know when you've got so many songs and you're like...
Or Tony Braxton.
What the fuck's that
What
called?
Was that, Tony Braxton? You're making...
That's an old song. Yeah.
Right, lads, come on, let's get out to back fast. Yeah, come on. Let's get out to back fast.
What you got?
I'll always think of you inside of my private thoughts. I can't remember you.
Right, we're in the Backfast area. What have we got today?
So yesterday, Pakistan versus India. Today, we're going to recreate Kuldeep's ball versus Baba.
Ooh.
Some people are saying it's the best ball of the tournament.
It wasn't the best ball of the century, though, because I bowled that.
To Ricky Ponting, I think, wasn't it?
There we go.
That was the one.
Shane Warne's his last century. This is mine.
But before you two face a delivery from each other, which, because we've been doing that every week, I wanted to get the other Backfast guy over. Gaz, get over here.
Oh,
get over here.
Oh, Gaz, love.
Come on, Gaz.
There's a reason.
This is your life, isn't it?
Oase, do you recognise this man?
No.
There's actually a story, so Gaz, you tell
the story. Do you remember that night in Swansea?
When I was about 6 years old, I was at Lord's watching Middlesex with my auntie, who's a member, and you hit a six, and the ball came and hit me on the arm.
No way!
Yeah, and I was worried that it was broken. It wasn't broken. But obviously, I was six, and made a bit of a meal of it, and you came over after the game and came and chatted to me and my auntie for about 10 minutes.
So. Oh, wait, sure.
Oh, there you go. That was a good blow, man. Hey, no worries, man. Sorry about that.
And I think you're here for your runs as well. So.
Oh, did I?
He's actually here to sue.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
And the worst thing is, on the cusp of signing a medical for his cricket dream. Turned out he had a slight fracture after all, and he failed that medical. And now he works at Backfast.
How's your auntie? You all right?
Yes.
Yeah, and your arms are out too.
Yeah,
you're
all right.
Right, you have to face each other. Who wants to bowl first?
Right. I always wanted to bowl.
So what, am I facing him?
Yeah, you're facing a Swanee delivery now.
Oh God, here we go.
What you got?
I've gone around the park a bit with these, alright.
Do I have to block you?
No. You try and smack it. You ready?
2 seconds.
This is the same stance. He's after 15 years. Ready?
Here we go.
Come on,
Swanee to Shah.
Come on, Swan. Oh, he's done it. You're kidding me.
He's done it.
You're kidding me.
Don't need to play.
You set that.
Oh, my God.
What? Next delivery, please.
Fairly done, you. God, you're bowling now.
Right, go on then.
As if I'm going to do that.
I would love for him to bowl you out here. I would love it.
I'll tell you, the one time when he was at Wacker Yunus, 13-year-old.
Oh, that was what a shot. That was slow.
Get the machine on.
That was out of the ground. Right, let's get the Backfast machine on then. Kuldeep Yadav's delivery to Barbar yesterday. Swanee, you're up first, facing it twice.
Okay.
Swanee.
Here we go.
Get your eye in quick, mate. It's going to be a bit harder than the one you just hit.
Oh, lovely. You're straight on that slog,
lovely. Easy for him. Look at this.
He's going to get out of jail shot, that.
Right, is it me now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not bad, Swanee. Let's see if...
Thanks, mate.
Oase can do better. You've talked him up a lot in this episode as well, so no pressure.
Yeah,
we're expecting big things now.
Oh, God. I'll try.
I'm looking forward to this. Here we go.
You got this.
Bosh. Ooh. Bat on ball. Wasn't the cleanest contact, but you got another chance.
He got two, though. He's back on strike.
Here we go. Bang! Lovely. Lovely.
See those wrists there? Just crunching it for four.
We'll take that.
Lovely, right.
I haven't done it for years.
Let's get back inside for some urban Critchnery.
I love it. Oh, great.
We're delving into the world of Rubicon's urban Critchnery.
Critchnery!
Celebration of weird and wonderful terminology used in the world
love
of cricket.
This bit.
So we're mixing it up and we're giving you, Swanee, some cricketing terminology and you've got to come up with a story to match.
Okay.
All right? First and foremost, two types.
Two types, which refers to two types of leave.
Yeah.
Worst leave I ever saw, Ricky Ponting in a Boxing Day test match. Shoulder arms, hit straight on the pad, out. A bit of reverse swing. Not because it was a leave, but the story behind it. In the huddle, Brez has appealed. It's been given out. He's reviewed it. He needs to. It's Australia. They're losing. Last chance to dies. Goes up on the big screen. Boom. It's hit him outside the line, but it's... And Brez goes, oh, no. We look at him and go, you what, Brez? It's hit him outside line. If you're not playing a shot, it doesn't matter. He doesn't even know that. He's an international bowler. And Strauss went, oh, Timothy, you're playing international cricket. I think you should know the LBW rule by now. I mean, not seriously. You need to tell umpires you're going to get crucified in press here. Genuinely didn't know. Genuinely did not know the rules. Brez, I love you.
It's a great story. Next, hands like knives.
Hands like knives refers to somebody catches like this. Worst catcher in the world. We had Monty on last week. Monty had hands like knives.
You told him as well.
I did.
Yeah. Gamble button.
The gamble button. No, it's in county cricket, you press the gamble button at a four-day game. You look at the weather forecast on CFAX. Do you remember CFAX? The night before.
Yeah, 8-8-8.
Yeah, and if it was chance of rain, 65-70%, the team would press the gamble button and go out on the source.
So, no way.
Yeah, normally you press the gamble button, you get in the morning, you open the curtains, listen for cars going through puddles. If you can't hear that, you're like... And if it's sunny, you're just like, oh, no! The best one I ever saw in Adelaide before the 2011 Ashes, we had a warm-up game, four-day game. First 3 days, we'd played, and we were ready for the Ashes. We didn't want to play the fourth day because we had to bowl all day. It was 100% chance of heavy rain the next day, so we all pressed the gamble button. The whole England squad pressed the gamble button. We went out. In fact, that's the night when the sprinkler came out. And anyway... We turn it the next day, it's cracking flags. And we're like, oh. The 11 most disgusting human beings in the world brought his second ball of the day. This black cloud appeared from nowhere and banged it down, like puddles before we got off the field. And we all ran in the changing room. The 11 most happy human beings. We all got in the changing room, found the stereo, and one by one, people going around doing a dance move. Got to Collie, he went, oh, do you remember that last in the nightclub last night about 4 a.m. doing that sprinkler? And as he said it, Andy Flowers behind again, what fucking time is it? Oh, I'm eating in the restaurant and about it. Restaurant about it. And that's the real story behind the sprinkler. That's where it came from.
How often did you have a hangover or press the gamble button?
For England, I never did it for England in a test match. I didn't ever do it in international cricket. It'd be very rare it happened. County cricket.
A lot.
Well, in the first couple of years of my Oasis career, 96, 97, this was just before the professional era really took off. You'd regularly pack your car, and this is before the smoking ban in nightclubs and pubs as well, so if you went out, you stank. You'd have four sets of going out kit put in your car before you had your cricket packed your cricket bag.
You'd be driving and right behind you, just hanging up your four ribbed Isaron shirts.
Pristine
white iron. Jeans, one pair of white jeans, slip-on Patrick Cox. Yeah.
And you're there. And then you pack your kit after. Yeah. And you go, yeah, I got my going out rear gear ready. Oh, yeah, I got to get my white pads, my blue pads.
I've forgotten my pads, but it doesn't matter. I've got my kickers.
Right, last one, Teflon.
Teflon is non-stick pans. But for goalkeepers who can't catch, for Teflon. My favourite term for that as well, Tim Zora who was the keeper, Aussie keeper in about 1987, one of the people wrote, press once wrote about him in a paper saying he was like a sleeping policeman. So he slowed the ball down but didn't actually stop it, which is quite, quite a nice way of saying shit.
Right, so there you go. That's Urban Frictionary. Come on, Swanee. Right, we are out of time for today's show, but thank you to OA Shah, right. Amazing guest today.
Thank you.
Amazing guest for having me.
Thanks,
I told you it'd be good. I told you it'd be good.
Next week, do you know we got next week?
Who?
Jamaica Olympic sprinter.
Johan Blake.
Have we really?
Johan Blake got me out first ball. There you go. OK, right, thank you for watching and listening, of course. Enjoy this week's games. Don't forget House of Rugby and TKO this week. We'll see you in 7 days' time. Bye-bye!
You've been listening to Swanee's Cricket Show on Joe, together with Rubicon.